As we've been talking about incarnation and what it means that Jesus became flesh and dwelt among us, we've been wrestling tonight with the great movements of people around the world. And one of the great movements of people have been Christian missionaries who've incarnated the Word of God in their very presence and in what they say, and gone around the world to bring the good news of Jesus there. One of the mission teams, mission agencies, that I think historically has best expressed what incarnation looks like was the China Inland Mission, where J. Hudson Taylor and other folk chose to live as the Chinese, dressing the way they dressed, eating the way they ate, and making their witness and dwelling among them. China Inland Mission, now called OMF International, is currently led by Patrick Fung. Patrick was appointed the general director of OMF in 2005, and I think the fascinating thing is that he's the first Chinese general director of OMF. And so now the mission field has become the mission leader, and we're in a new era of missions. And so we wanted to give ourselves an opportunity to hear from Patrick about some of his experiences and what does it mean as a mission to live incarnationally. So Patrick, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Patrick, it sounds a little stereotypical, but you left a medical practice in order to move into vocational mission. Could you just briefly tell us what led you from being a medical doctor to being a vocational missionary in this
way? I came from a very traditional Chinese family. I suppose my family values, very similar to many Chinese, success, stability, and security. So I still remember my mom told me to find a successful career, stable job, and then find a stable wife.
So what led you to OMF?
And then in 1977, when I became a Christian, that was the first year I entered medical school, that really changed my life. My inner world was changed upside down. When I studied the scripture, I discovered that most, if not all, the servants of God in the Bible never had a stable life. Not Daniel, not Nehemiah, not Paul, not the good Dr. Luke. But what Jesus promised his disciples, that Jesus is going to be with them. He is with them always. And that really challenged me. And that began to challenge me thinking about my own life. The Lord challenged me in 1979 as a third-year medical student. When I was a third-year medical student, the Lord said, first, give your life to me. I still remember Proverbs 23 challenged me, give your heart to me. My son, give your heart to me. Then talents, then the gifts. And that challenged me, began thinking about missions.
Wow. I know you mentioned your parents' expectations for you. And I know that they were quite opposed to your decision at the beginning, something that many of the people here can will experience themselves. How did you negotiate that conversation with your parents?
It was really difficult. My father is my hero, and I found it very hard when God began to challenge me to think about mission work, and we were planning to go to the mission field, to go to Pakistan with my wife. My wife is also a medical doctor. And my father couldn't imagine two doctors would be willing to go to the mission field. So it was very hard. We were working as medical doctors. So we decided to do something. You know, what is something tangible that I can show my parents I love them with the love of God? So after 7 years working as a medical doctor, we took out all our savings and we gave it to our parents and say, Lord, you know, this is what we have for you. And we told our parents that we love them with the love of God and take the savings and we go out to the mission field trusting that God will provide for us. Indeed, that was 20 years ago and now we see that God still is the Jehovah Jireh, and God provides.
It strikes me by choosing to do that, by choosing to give up your savings and providing for your parents, in some ways, providing for them now, what you may not be able to do for them in their old age, that you were demonstrating what it means to honor, obey them in the present, as well as honor God simultaneously, and making a costly personal sacrifice as you did so.
It's not really. My parents, my father particularly, really was very amazed. He kept saying to me, you two poor doctors, you are supposed to be rich. You're not rich, but there's something very unique in you. You have a joy that we cannot understand. It has to do something with your God. And that really changed the heart of my dad. After many years of opposing, now they've accepted us serving God full time. And that really is God's grace, not just in me, but in my family as well.
And so part of your story is really patience and trusting in God over the long term.
Yeah, it's a journey. Also, trusting God will work not only in our lives, but also in the lives of our parents as well. Over 20 years. It's a long journey.
And so in some ways, you were discipling your parents at that moment.
To honor them, but also to lead them to the Lord.
That's amazing. You've written a booklet that OMF has published called Live to Be Forgotten. And it's available, I know, in the bookstore. It struck me that in North America right now, we have a culture of celebrity. And we talk about leaving a legacy, doing something so that you will be remembered. Why did you write a book called Live to Be Forgotten?
Yeah, I recognize that this world today, particularly from the West, we talk about successful leadership, recognized leadership. Mm-hmm. But a number of years ago, I was at a library in a university in London, and I was led to this archive department, and I entered this big room, a huge, like a warehouse, and there was columns and columns of files. And this chief archivist, who was not even a believer, she said to me something that I never forgot. She said, each file represents one life that gave themselves to God and for the gospel and for the Chinese people. Wow. When I heard that, I was totally speechless and I began to cry. And I thought, that was 100 years ago when there were thousands of people who gave their lives to God for the Chinese people for the sake of the gospel. And most of them, I recognize some names like Hudson Taylor, Robert Morrison, but most of the names, they never make into the history books. And that really convinced me. Some of the most important workers for the kingdom for the 21st century, I believe, are the nameless people. They make Christ visible, not themselves.
North American Christians are notorious for self-publicity. We use Twitter, we use Facebook, we use MySpace. We're constantly telling people who we are, publicizing ourselves. What practical disciplines would you encourage these students who live in a self-promotional age to adopt in order that they could live to be forgotten and Christ could be made known?
To love people, those who are far and near, to love and serve. I think people in this generation need to feel in tangible ways Christ's love, in very tangible ways. Go and serve with your gifts, with your love, and with all the talents God has given us. I do believe that God has tremendously blessed the churches here in North America with many gifts, many talents, many PhDs, and God is going to use them for his kingdom's sake. We need to humble before God.
How have you experienced that as you've moved from being a medical doctor to 7 years of ministry in Pakistan to being the general director of OMF? What have been some of the ways that you've had to embrace choosing to be forgotten rather than remembered?
Well, something that God reminds me, God's work done in God's way will never lack God's supply. That was the saying of Hudson Taylor. And for the past 20 years, that was what I experienced. Never doubt God, have faith in God, trust him. And also, without an element of risk, there is no faith. We must be willing to take risks for God. And God will look after us. Jehovah Jireh, he is Jehovah Jireh, he will provide.
So it seems that the big barrier many people will face is fundraising. The need to admit, I'm dependent on someone else for my support. I have to rely on people, other people, rather than being self-sufficient. Being a medical doctor, largely the training is how do you provide for yourself? How do you be self-sufficient? How do you make good decisions? How has God used fund development and fundraising?
I think some of the challenge is that to receive from God, that needs humility. We're used to giving out because we're doctors, but to be able to receive from God, that is a blessing. And to be able to be part of God's community, let other people support you as well. We are all part of God's global community to bring the gospel to the world.
And so really, you're inviting us to receive grace.
Yes.
Rather than to do it. Let me ask, OMF has a long history, 140 plus years in Asia. What lessons do you think the North American church can learn from the church in Asia, particularly in China?
Let me talk about the China church. I think two particular things. One is suffering and joy. The church in China has gone through a lot of suffering, but joy and suffering are always together. They are always compatible. But joy and bitterness, they are not compatible. We can be bitter with God, bitter with ourselves, bitter with other people, and that may be because of our own self-ambition. And I pray that we will be having joy and joy and also
in the context of
suffering together. And it's always there. And I can see the church in China have that. The second thing that I learned is surprises. God surprised us. For 40 years, the church in China was without outside help. And yet the church not only survived, but grew from strength to strength. And I think it's important. There was no grand strategy, no master plans, no charismatic leaders. But God preserved the church. We need to allow God to surprise us and wait upon God with humility.
It seems that a theme in what you've been saying is trust in the sovereignty of God for our personal provision, for a church without leadership, to sustain us through suffering. You have to believe that God is truly in control.
That's right. God is sovereign.
So what are some lessons that you would want to offer the church in Asia, both positively and negatively, given what you see here in North America?
I think it's not just the church in Asia, but the church in the world. As we grow, as we receive blessings from God, I think we need to be careful not to commit mistakes that maybe other people did in the past. It's a triumphalistic, we can do it mentality. It's very ethnocentric, very self-centered. I think we need one another, both the East and the West, both the North and the South. That's God's global community. We are called to be God's people, to bring the gospel to the world, the gospel from everywhere to everywhere.
It's quite a challenge, then, to the church in North America, which has really made its name and contributed to World Mission largely because of that can-do, we can do it, we can make it happen spirit. For college students right now, can you suggest a simple discipline that they could undertake today to begin to live with the humility and the sense of interdependence that partnership would require?
Have faith in God. Trust in Him. Willing to take risks for God. Mm-hmm. And believe that God's work done in God's will will never lack God's supply.
Great. Patrick, thank you very much for
coming
to Urbana.
Thank you, Greg.